Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest for our Back to School series, welcome back to school, everybody. I don't know if you want to hear that or you're happy about it or you're sad about it. But again, a part of our Welcome Back series, we're having the top educators pretty much just give us a high level 2025-2026 welcome back hello, and to start the year off right with strategies that can lead into the full academic year. And today's guest is one of the academics I love to geek out with. Every time I see him, I give him a big hug and say, hey, you're here. We just wind up having some of the most awesome conversations, but more importantly, one of the smartest education leaders across the country, and glad to have him, just not a part of, you know, our network, but being my friend as well. So I would like to welcome Dr. Bill Bradford, who is the Assistant Superintendent of Academics and School Leadership for Fayette County Public Schools in Fayette, Kentucky. Like I said, you'll see why we got him on the Back to School series here. But my main man, Dr. Bradford, how are you today?
Hello, I'm great. Welcome back to school.
Yeah, well, Dr. Bradford, see, when you say that to somebody, it's either, yay, we're back in for the academic year, or, ooh, we got a long time to tune.
It's all in your perspective.
All in perspective. But knowing you, Dr. Bradford, the first day of school for you is every single day that's being underscored within your work. But my friend, welcome to Voices for Excellence. And again, just from this subjective notion, is that I brought you on here because the invigorating and profound conversations that we have around education selfishly is great for us. But of course, I want to be able to unpack the collective intellectual property that you and I have within our conversations, but more importantly, the level of expertise that you have with curriculum instruction assessment, but more importantly, leadership development. So are you ready, Dr. Bradford?
I am. Yes. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Bradford, when leaders and stakeholders engage with your leadership signature, specifically in Fayette County Public Schools and beyond, what song will come to their mind when they describe Dr. Bill Bradford in the education ecosystem?
Wow. You know, that's a tricky question to start, of course. But I probably would select or make an assumption that the song selection would be Stand by Rascal Flatts. Because, you know, you really have to show a certain level of perseverance in this role and really throughout our industry these days. And so really it's those that that are kept standing that are, I think, held in the highest regard and are really looked to as pillars within an organization for keeping the momentum moving forward and still focusing on continuous improvement, even in light of any distractions that may be happening from your local or national landscape, political or otherwise. So that would be the selection that I would choose for both myself, as well as make an assumption that others would select on my part.
Absolutely. Dr. Bradford, and the association, I should say, or the parallelization with Flatts. Wow. I just love Rascal Flatts. And we can talk about that. That's when we were growing up, the same age range. But I love that because when you say, or when you state a continuous improvement, despite, you know, political noise, despite any type of noise that distract you from the work, I always like to say that, you know, we have to be able to find ways to eliminate exception processing. And exception processing is anything that deteriorates or anything that is outside of the critical objectives, goals, vision, mandates of an actual learning organization, and a self-perseverance and, you know, really, really underscoring that continuous improvement no matter what distractions is happening. That is you, Dr. Bradford. That is underscored in your work every day. But now what I want is talk about now, Dr. Bradford, is the intentionality that Fayette County Public Schools have underscored with regards to the work around teaching and learning, innovation, but more importantly, and this is more of a subjective and objective hybrid statement of your portrait of a graduate 2.0 that I think is one of the best in the country, but how you create systems and structures that are embedded within it, right? So I would say that this alignment and deliberate attention, Dr. Bradford, for coherence is one that should be modeled across the country. And to my audience, anybody that wants to learn alignment, coherence of systems to an actual framework or vision with indicators that are embedded within the vision, please see Dr. Bradford in Fayette County. But for level setting purposes, Dr. Bradford, unpack the Fayette County Public Schools portrait of a graduate and how your learning organization is meeting the evolving needs of Kentucky's workforce development.
Absolutely. So we are currently in the middle, literally, we just concluded year three of the implementation of our strategic plan. We call it our New Way Forward Strategic Plan. It was launched in the year 2022. And so, of course, now that we are ending the 24-25 school year, that really concludes 3 years of a five-year strategic plan. And just like any other organization's to be expected strategic plan, we have multiple elements, multiple priority areas that are embedded within it. But our number one is student achievement, because that is clearly the reason why we are all in the roles that we are in, especially in educational leadership. And so very purposefully embedded within this student achievement priority area is the articulation of our portrait of a graduate. It is incredibly important to us as an organization to verify that we have opportunities starting in preschool all the way through when our students exit from us in grade 12, that our students are demonstrating these essential competencies embedded within our portrait of a graduate. And what I would say is Fayette County Public Schools over the last just couple of years, so within this implementation of our strategic plan, we migrated from a portrait of a graduate original variation to a, as you recalled it, a 2.0 model. So we took what the industry and workforce indicated to us was important in developing our portrait of a graduate in 2017. And last year, in the 22-23 school year, we updated that. We re-engaged with thought partners to determine what is it that we needed to do to update our portrait of graduate and verify that our current model is more aligned to what the community wants from us and that our students will be more prepared for the futures that lie ahead of them. So our portrait of a graduate 2.0 is a model that includes four promises, essentially four discrete yet concrete areas that we are imagining how to provide unique opportunities at each grade level band for students to really have meaningful chances to engage with those expectations. We have the promise of a lifelong learner. We have the promise of being civically engaged and culturally responsive. We have a promise of being both future and life ready. And then by all means, our fourth promise encompasses resiliency and being able to be reflective. And so our challenge then becomes, how do we as an organization verify that regardless of your zip code, regardless of the school or program that you attend, every child or every student under our tutelage will have genuine opportunities to not only learn at high levels, the actual grade level standards and master those standards, but do so through the lens and through the opportunity to demonstrate these real world and real life expectations for what we want our students to know and to do and to be like. And so that's a challenge that we have embraced, but it's also a challenge that we continue to strive to be better at. What I would suggest is a way that we've tried to make that happen is a significant amount of teacher engagement. So we have really found that in order for us to have a portrait of a graduate that is lifted off a page and lifted off a poster, we need to verify and make sure that our teachers are well-versed in what we want our students to become as it relates to our portrait of a graduate, and then equip them with the materials and resources that will allow them to leverage not just their academic standards, but also the essential elements of this portrait of a graduate. So we've done that in a variety of ways. We have engaged teachers as leaders specifically at the secondary level, grades 6 through 12, as we have morphed our individualized learning plan, our ILP, which is a state requirement in Kentucky that all students in grades 6 through 12 do a individualized learning plan. So we simply embrace that as a natural opportunity to embed our portrait of a graduate. So we've been using teacher leaders to help us navigate how to blend those two expectations so that students are having one meaningful experience. Another is we've really focused on the concepts of deeper learning, vibrant learning. You know, there are a lot of different ways to capture that notion. But essentially, how are we having our students truly immerse themselves in the rigor of what they need to learn from a knowledge standpoint and from a skill standpoint, and then be able to determine, okay, how do they demonstrate those skills and knowledge in ways that are not traditionally manufactured, but in new ways, innovative ways, and in ways that allow them to engage with projects and performance-based and even industry partnerships. And so those are two distinct ways that we have engaged teachers as leaders to help us. The last piece that I would mention would be, we have instructional frameworks developed in reading, math, science, and sources, the core areas throughout all grade levels in our school system. And so it provides a scope and sequence for our teachers to follow to verify that our students are being exposed to and getting the opportunity to master standards all across the scope of an academic school year. So what we have done is we have started to brand and code those frameworks with content from our portrait of a graduate so that at developmentally appropriate stages, our students are getting a chance to actually have education and experiential learning through the lens of our portrait of a graduate across their time in our schools.
Dr. Bradford, compelling and profound. And to my audience, Dr. Bradford, we use Voices for Excellence as asynchronous professional learning that is self-directed, right? So when we talk about different levels of personalization, personalized learning, path, place, pace, and time, emulation is around at that andragogy level, adult learning, but broken down to heterodagogy, self-directed learning. And to my audience, the answer that Dr. Bradford provided is one of those answers that you want to be able to play back multiple times, because I counted 7 different theoretical frames that Dr. Bradford touched upon, but put it in a practical standpoint. As an example, and Dr. Bradford, that's why I say this is so compelling. You, at the beginning of your answer, just truly loved how you showed that system or demonstrated that systems alignment, going from the 5-year strategic operating plan to now how the strategic operating plan encompasses the Portrait of a Graduate 2.0, and how that 2.0 is realized into our classrooms, where now teachers are empowered with the development of what I like to say, the artifacts, the instructional frameworks, being a part of the design. And Dr. Bradford, you encompassed too various elements of design thinking, that first principle, empathy, closing the feedback loops to have the customers be a part of the design. Wow, your 4 promises outlines to the broader of the portrait of a system, those 7 elements that you're very familiar with, and how your students verifying, I love that terminology, verifying. As you can see to my audience, this is why I love speaking to Dr. Bradford. This is our normal conversations. You verify, and when we talk about verifying and demonstrating, it talks about 2 core domains from the Delta 2030 study that's absent from the traditional model: self-leadership and digital focus. Absolutely just amazing. And for you to be able to coordinate this in this level of systems level coherence is one to be modeled and emulated. So that's why to my audience, I said that you want to go and see what truly systems alignment coherence, and then having the stakeholders be a part of the process from this empathy standpoint of design thinking. Contact Dr. Bradford. We'll get his information afterwards. Flood his email, flood his phones. He'll take your calls, because this is, I can tell you, you have to see it in action as well. But you started to talk about instruction, and what I love the phrase you said, rigor of what they need to learn, right? Now I want to bring it down to this classroom instruction, this pedagogy or this pedagogical context of alignment with your portrait of a system 2.0. Now, strategically, from a large district standpoint, because we have a good amount of leaders that are in charge of large school districts here. If I'm a large district leader, whether it be at central office or whether it be at the superintendent level, how do I leverage this into classroom instruction? And one, right? And then now this is for leaders, whether they lead a small rural district or a fairly large urban district. Where do I start? This sounds great, Dr. Bradford, but where do I start when it comes to redesigning and transforming traditional legacy systems in alignment to my own district portrait of a graduate or profile of a learner?
I think that we have been able to incorporate a few strategies to the level of this question. I think that we're obviously on a continuous improvement journey ourselves, and we're continuing to strategize new and unique ways for us to further embrace. But one of the suggestions that I would certainly have would be to plan with the end in mind. So just like any good unit developer, you know, you think through what do you want the end result to be, and then work backwards from there. And so one of our goals as an organization, one of our promises, quite frankly, is that each one of our students at designated grade levels will have opportunities to defend their learning, quite literally, defenses of learning, where students will be able to share with a panel of both industry partners, city and district leaders, as well, and their peers, examples of what they have learned in their classrooms and how what they have learned is incorporated or is embedded within our portrait of a graduate. And so knowing that that is a long-term or even a shorter-term interval goal, our teachers and school leaders have to develop a framework within their own buildings to make sure that students are curating those pieces of evidence along the way. And so we have multiple modalities in place in Fayette County Public Schools where our students at different grade levels are categorizing and making a record of their learning experiences so that they end up having this, for lack of a better word, portfolio to pull from at grade 3, grade 5, grade 8, grade 10, et cetera, whatever are our designated grade levels, to be able to go into their inventory of quality learning outcomes and be able to pull out the ones that truly exemplify one or more of our portrait of a graduate promises. And so knowing that as a system, this is what we want every third grader to be able to do, every eighth grader to be able to do. It unites all of our educators together to make sure that as they are planning units and lessons and learning experiences for students to be challenged with, that they're doing so with the invitation for students to merge what they're learning academically with what they're, quite frankly, learning from a workforce and industry readiness perspective. We have been really championing a phrase, and that phrase is yes and. Yes, we will continue to provide a high quality teaching and learning environment where students are going to be navigated to the highest levels of ACT scores that they can earn, that they will continue to master grade level standards so that our Kentucky Summit of Assessment scores come back as high as possible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, we will commit to those standard traditional methods and mechanisms by which to increase student achievement. And so yes, and we are going to make sure that our students develop these essential competencies, these workplace readiness skills, where they can effectively contribute to our local, regional, state, and national society in meaningful ways. And so that is our commitment. That is what we have rallied behind. And that is exactly what is navigating our work and moving forward. What's important to us is what we communicate. So one of the ways that we have really spearheaded this effort is in bringing a connection to the portrait of a graduate with everything we do, whether it is a district leadership meeting, a principal cadre meeting, a board of education meeting, each one of those venues and more, we specifically cite elements from the portrait of a graduate that the activities that we're doing or the reports that we're making align to. And what that does is that keeps our portrait of a graduate elevated in everybody's mindset, that we have an easy, structure by which everybody is working towards the same North Star and everybody understands what that North Star is.
Again, Dr. Bradford, this is another question I would hope my audience be able to go back and dissect in segmented context. What I love about your answer is this yes and, right? And when you started to bring up the yes and the and, we always look at this, and I always try to use the comparison of Daniel Kahneman's work, systems one thinking versus systems two thinking. And education underscores a lot of systems one thinking, right? Yes or no, right or wrong, traditional practices or innovative practices. But that whole systems two, deep thinking, experimentation with multiple iterations of what you're experimenting on, is that yes and that and. Goes back to the polarity context, right? There's no competition, problem solving, but it's the and, right? Traditional practices and innovative practices. Career readiness and college readiness, right? Career readiness and what I like to say now for 22nd century modes, future readiness as well. And really just love the fact that you are intentionally, if Faye is intentionally preparing students for the 22nd century, right? With that yes and that and. Intentional with regards to how you say curating the pieces of evidence where students are demonstrating their modalities with that. To my audience, again, please, this is, again, as you can see, I'm a real big fan of Dr. Bradford and the work that he's doing in Fayette County. And you can see why, right? There's a lot of research, a lot of next in class practices from various industries that are disrupting the model, where now we know that we're truly preparing students in Fayette County for that 22nd century, Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, taking into consideration your students that are in front of you. But I want to, you know, take elements from your last answer, Dr. Bradford, and bring it into this question, right? Obviously, this is what I call disruptive innovation, right? Transformative practices, specifically in the context and alignment of your strategic operating plan and your portrait of a graduate and the systems that are supporting that to elevate both. But how do you effectively scale this, right? Because we got to start somewhere and we have to intentionally scale throughout the district. You're a large district. You scaled this in a very, very big district amongst, I believe, is 80 schools. But how do you balance and implement a vision into reality using this notion of scaling?
So I would say that we've really capitalized upon two very distinct strategies in order to make progress towards this goal. I won't say accomplished, but to make progress towards this goal. And the first is you really have to provide opportunities for education, specifically for teachers. And so early adopters become your greatest asset when considering promoting change. And as we all know, especially in our industry, education, you know, transformational leadership has a lot to do with developing a guiding coalition and having that coalition be able to be very focused on what we want to accomplish and then to be supportive in helping to engage others towards navigating in that same direction. And so what we've done is really made available opportunities for teachers to self-select and or be encouraged to be selected for our cohorts for deeper learning and vibrant learning, where we have provided ongoing professional learning and education, collaborative opportunities where teachers in these cohorts have been able to dive deeper into the models of deeper learning so that they could not only have some initial experiences themselves, but also to be able to then go back to their respective grade level teams, departments, schools, and even cadres of schools in our district to share what it is that they have learned and to share what it is that they have done, and then to be able to share their ideas for how others can replicate that and be involved in the same capacity. So along those same lines, another strategy that we have implored is making sure that schools that as a whole want to be early adopters get that opportunity to as well. So our long-term goal included defenses of learning at every school at designated grade levels. But we knew that if we introduced the concept to a few selected schools to start, we could essentially do a pilot implementation. And that's exactly what we have done, is we've been able to work with selected schools that wanted the opportunity for their campuses to be the earliest implementers of defenses of learning and to be able to provide targeted supports for them to achieve that goal locally at a high level. And then once they did and had some successes, inviting in their counterparts to see some examples of the work that they've put into place. And so that has really built a certain level of energy where now schools across the system are much more intrinsically now motivated to also be a part of this long-term goal, but to quite frankly help us to achieve that much even earlier than anticipated and expected. And that's pretty on brand right now with the work that we're seeing in Fayette County Public Schools as a whole. I referenced our strategic plan a little bit earlier, and I have the privilege of leading that work here in our school system. And just this week, I was able to share with the Board of Education that if you consider a 5-year implementation of our strategic plan, evidence currently shows that after just year 3, we are nearly 80% completed with the expected activities that we wanted to accomplish. Now, of course, completed is relative. That simply means it's in implementation mode, but it really only leaves us with 4/5 of the content that we originally conceptualized to be yet, you know, put into action or to be actualized. And so really, I say that as an example of our momentum with the Portrait of a Graduate is really demonstrating that same level of success and interest across our organization.
Unbelievable, Dr. Bradford. And what I love about that answer is when you highlighted the Gaia Coalition and the early adopters in the self-selection process, I saw this triangulation of Everett Rogers' work, diffusion theory, diffusion innovation theory, where you're focusing on those early adopters at 12.5%, even the, I like to say, extreme innovators, the 2.5%. And mixed in, when you talk about that guided coalition, John Cotter's work around leading change, really love both of those work. I like to use them in a separate context, but you just gave me an idea to interface both of them as well. Self-selection, that's 22nd century. That goes back to my 22nd century education model, where now professional learning becomes targeted and differentiated for that adult learner, where just like where we want to provide choice within our classrooms from to enhance pedagogy, we want to be able to enhance professional learning and education with the self-selection process and understanding what are your specific gap areas to strengthen the collective quality of instruction. Absolutely phenomenal. And that experimentation, piloting, A/B testing, long-term goals, and being able to scale with that. But what I really loved, and to my audience, is how Dr. Bradford intentionally, to his Board of Education, identified how they're making progress towards the KPIs in relationship to the Portrait of a Graduate. And again, this is me being biased of your work, Bill, and also me being very subjective about this. This is a model, right? You don't see true synergy from a coherent standpoint like this, especially from a large school system. Kudos to you and the full leadership team with that. But I want to get into a topic that everybody talks about. And one day I hope that, you know, these two letters won't be dropped into education because it'll be a part of the fabric, AI, artificial intelligence, right? And I know that you have done and the team at Fayette County Public Schools have done a phenomenal job with exploration, experimentation, iteration, with launching various tools and emerging technologies in FCPS. But in the context of a large learning organization, Dr. Bradford, what were the first steps that you and your team took to start to explore AI in Fayette County Public Schools? And second, what were the broad challenges you anticipated? And how did you address AI literacy, policy, compliance, and initial resistance, right, within your learning organization?
Well, I do want to start by simply just suggesting that, you know, I have the great honor and privilege of representing the interests of Fayette County Public Schools, especially in a venue like this. But it is by all means a significant team that is collaborating to bring forward all of these amazing results. And so I want to make sure there's a record of that.
Let's get to my Fayette County Public Schools team. I love you. Listen, I always say this, it is the Miami Heat. When LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade was all playing, let's go to our women's team, UConn, well, my women's team, the UConn Huskies, when we had Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, that whole Tina Charles, that whole team that was loaded. That's Fayette County. But I wanted to say that. But go ahead, Dr. Bradford.
Yeah, of course. Well, I just wanted the record to reflect that too. But, you know, for us, you know, one of the ways that we've really launched artificial intelligence, AI across our schools, is to make sure that we're doing one of two things, or that we're doing two things concurrently. Number one, our educators and leaders need training and education, while at the same time, we have needed to invest in our students receiving training and education, because that training and education looks different for those two distinct stakeholder groups. Our students at this time are fully technology savvy. In fact, their proficiency rates and the utilization of technology, all aspects, far outpace any of the adults in our organization by and large. However, what our responsibility becomes is, how do we curate their educational experience so that we are providing them with the right way to leverage that technology and the correct and most appropriate ethical ways to utilize artificial intelligence? And that training and education looks significantly different than what we need to do for our adults in the organization, which is, number one, what is it? And then number two, how to use it. So we have to make sure that we're tailoring our methodology in ways that are sensitive and appropriate for our designated audiences. So a lot of what we've done to work towards making progress with this goal is in exposure. And so making sure that we have a team within the organization, which we have done, we have ratified a technology leadership team that has really been used to engage in all of the available artificial intelligence that is available to our organization and to our industry at large, and to be able to determine what are the ways, or how are the ways, that we can share these tools, these resources, and these materials with each of these targeted stakeholder groups that I kind of have already mentioned. And so that is something that we've done, is attempted to develop a professional learning plan that really started first with some technical guidance, and then has progressed to almost like a problem of practice model, right? So for example, we have learned so much about what Notebook LM can do for us in terms of truly synthesizing information. And of course, that is just one tool of many. But one of the things we've needed to do is find a way in with our educators to start. Why would this be an attractive resource? Why would this be a useful tool? And so by being able to present ways that we can actually be more efficient and more effective, AI becomes one opportunity by which to do that. And so really it's about building wins and about verifying that we are setting people up to be most successful in their roles. And so really selling it from that standpoint, that this is what the benefit is for you in terms of return on investment. And then quite frankly, at the same time, as I mentioned, making sure that our students have every available exposure to develop expertise in this area, because expertise in the year 2025 in AI will look different than expertise in the year 2026 in AI. So as skillful as we can keep our students as well, they can actually help to pilot and really, quite frankly, lead us to where we need to go in the next iteration. You asked about challenges. There certainly have been some, but the most significant challenges we have faced is that fear of the unknown. We will recognize that educators specifically are rather traditional by nature. There are certainly innovative mindsets throughout every organization, ours included. However, by and large, a teacher and educator is more traditional in their thinking. So we obviously tend to, at the forefront, push back on something that's new or different or irregular simply because we're a little bit nervous about it. So what we've had to do is absolve some of that nervous energy by really talking about the assets and really being able to provide concrete education and training on how to use AI and to be able to make sure that we have, I would call them technological systems in place to combat the most inappropriate use of AI. So in our setting, you know, making sure that we have plagiarism type checks. You know, there's a lot of things that we could put into place for students to submit their artifacts, their work products that can be verified that it was done, you know, genuinely by an individual and not so much manufactured by AI. Those would be sort of the challenges that we've had. But by and large, it's been mostly embraced because of our style.
Yeah. And Dr. Bradford, what an answer, right? And I love the fact that you created two parallels to build AI literacy and fluency, specifically in the context of your stakeholders, education stakeholders, around that whole education professional learning piece. But more importantly, putting that education and that learning with the students. So, and you said it in your answer, both explicitly and implicitly, that essentially you want the locus control of learning, the locus control of utility of the AI, shift from the adults to now the students are underscoring it, leading the learning in an ethical manner. That's where the compliance, policy, literacy, fluency, this dynamic of the same parallelization of all boats going up. But you are so true, right? And you know, I find this, you know, even sometimes with my son, Dr. Bradford, that, you know, I still have traditional mindsets of, you know, how kids should be raised. You know, how you were raised, how I was raised. You know, we talk back to adults, you know, what's coming. And there wasn't no, you know, called DCF, right, with that. My mother used to give me the telephone to make the phone call. But now is when you see that when students, you know, we might think that they're being disrespectful or rude. No, it's a part of their 22nd century learning attribute about being in Generation Alpha and Generation Beta, where there's an immense level of curiosity and a lot of questioning. I always say this, you know, that, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't even know who my superintendent was. Sorry, Dr. Bruce Storm, but, you know, didn't even know his name as a senior. But now we're seeing, and I bet you, Dr. Bradford, you probably have second and third graders going to your executive assistant, asking for meetings and demanding quality in their specific context. We're talking about 9, 10-year-olds, right? So it's that whole dimension of that shift of, like you said, the fear of unknown, where traditionally we think in this traditional legacy context, teacher prep programs prepare us in that manner, but when we have these new emergent innovations, levels of creativity to implement, oh, wow, we, you know, we get kind of scared with that. But that's just naturalized within us as ourselves. I love the whole problem of practice model. This is just absolutely amazing. I'm taking a lot of notes because I'm actually learning a lot from you, Dr. Bradford, as well, and the return on investment focused on the student. So as much as I don't want to say this, I have to, because I'm biased, because I just love speaking with you. Last question. You made it through, right? Now, Doc, now I don't know if I can hold this to you, but you know, with everybody else, when I ask this question, they don't listen to me, right? They're rule breakers, right? So I'm going to try to limit you to 3 words. Now it's going to be very hard, but I'm going to try to limit you to 3 words. But as I say to everybody else, take it as it is, okay? But what 3 words do you want our audience to leave this episode today regarding 22nd century development for Generation Alpha and Beta, as well as innovation as a strategy for systems change?
Well, I mean, I would certainly have to pinpoint communication. I would have to pinpoint collaboration. And I would absolutely have to identify confidence. And so there's the answer. I do think that, you know, I just would love to bring, you know.
You have to. You can't leave it like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, communication is another form of currency. You know, it's just like when you go to the store and you're making a purchase for something that you want. Communication is that non in a monetary currency that we have, and it benefits both parties, both exchanges. It benefits both persons or both organizations whenever you have effective communication, the sharing of ideas, sharing of details, the sharing of thoughts. That's important in any setting. Having there be a certain level of collaboration is also important, because that is where the world is going in terms of workforce. You know, industry leaders are by and far saying is, I don't need to hire someone as innately skilled in this particular trade or industry or area, as long as they can work collaboratively and cooperatively with others. Do they have a likability to them? And so therefore collaboration becomes important, and you do have to teach that. We have to teach our students how to collaborate. So that's why I think that's important. And then, you know, I think that the current landscape we're in really brings to light why I've also chosen confidence, because especially in the education industry, there's never stability. You know, you always have these unknown factors. You always have things happening in and around you that can be distracting, or that can be demotivating, or that can just simply be disheartening. So confidence becomes important, because when you have conviction and you know we're headed in this direction because it's best for kids, rest on that. And we've had multiple examples over the last decade of where that has been very important. So I would stay pretty firm on that one as well. So those are definitely my suggestions.
Dr. Bradford, the three C's: communication, collaboration, and confidence. Dr. Bradford, it is such an honor, my friend, to have you on Voices for Excellence. This was just an amazing episode, loaded with so many concepts and practices, research, evidence-based practices and theories, rooted in broad archetypes, prototypes that are just necessary in education. How would my audience be able to get in contact with you to expand on anything that you presented within this episode?
I would welcome any outreach, perhaps via email would be most appropriate. It is just bill.bradford@fayette.kyschools.us. And you could also find me listed on our district website, which is fcps.net.
Thank you, Dr. Bradford. To my audience, now you see why I love talking to Bill all the time. He's a walking research machine. So one of the smartest individuals I know. Dr. Bradford, thank you again so much. And as you know, this is September. Good luck to you in the 25-26 academic year, year 4 of your strategic operating plan. I cannot wait to hear more with regards to the core competencies and indicators and students exhibiting 22nd century learning attributes and competencies. Thank you again for all the work that you're doing, and the Fayette County Public Schools team.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome back, everybody, to school. Onward and upward. Have a great day.